Blog Talk Radio.
And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, they be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Mind, body, and soul,
it's you living.
We all under attack,
it's you different.
I know niggas existing in two prisons, feeling they through living like death is too tempting. What's a day worth? Put a price on it. He was 17, the judge dropped life on him. He ain't live yet, now he in the tight corner.
Gang got their sights on him,
on the yard with a knife on him. Family trying to tell him to chill, we gon' get you home. He like, how my pills dead, they took the road. That's kinda cold when you think about it. He shot a nigga, he ain't think about it, didn't even blink about it. But he was trapped in the hood and couldn't think about it. Really trying to be about it, never left his public housing, which resembles the dormitories he's trapped in. So who knew that they was prepping him back then? Yeah, on how to live packed in, make him hate his black skin. I swear it's all facts, man.
Yeah, I swear to God it's all facts, man.
So you should let the track spin. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. Remember calling my mom to tell my sentence. Since I don't do no snitching, I'm not a witness. They gave me 23 years, ma,
I'm finished.
I think she cried for like 15 minutes. Over the years, there's enough tears to fill a lake. A lot of trips on
interstates for visiting.
Remember Tony got stabbed,
may he rest in peace.
Stressed my mother so bad, she barely slept for weeks. Thankful that it wasn't me, knowing prison dangers. Doing time with ISIS and killers and gangbangers. Some of us get caught in the matrix, but can you blame us? Trapped in cages like animals trying to tame us. Parole hearings are jokes, you go a 50 times. Same excuse every time, serious nature of the crime. I can't change the crimes that I committed, but I can't change my mind and not repent. And I might never let the pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though. I might never let that pain show, but it be driving me insane though. They give a chance to take them back, I just pray I make it back, and still I never be the same though.
Bismillah. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah, barakatuh, to the believers, and peace, salam to you all. Welcome to another night of Point of Impact. That's right, y'all, we here, doing it right. Here we are on the 15th of October, and I'm grateful to Allah to be in the program. As you can see, I'm moving. I'm moving about, y'all. You know how it is, you know, our body has a way of calling us, and when our body calls us, we have to submit. So, you call me in the midst of movement, but we're going to get it going here. Hassan and Krista, my co-host, are you here with us?
Yes, sir, we here.
Okay, okay. Mother Queen Krista, you with us?
Good evening. Yes, I'm here.
Okay, okay. And, of course, we got the brother to the people, Hassan. Hassan Shabazz, y'all. The man that makes
no
it happen.
No doubt. Yeah, so, listen, we here tonight and we're going to make it work, man. Right?
Yes, sir, yes,
let's get it done.
Yeah, I'm so grateful tonight to be here with my family. You know what I'm saying? And to be here with you all, our podcast family. And we got a beautiful guest coming on tonight, my man Poppy. You know what I'm saying? Many of you know him as Poppy. His name is Angel Reyes, the Hoya, the Jose, the Jesus. but we're going to say Poppy. Okay. This is my man. He's with us tonight, joining us. This is a beautiful brother, man. I can't wait for you all to meet him. I met Poppy, you know, behind the barbed wire city, you know, and we were in there doing positive things with our lives. And I can remember very, very strongly having conversations with Poppy about, you know, becoming a better man and becoming a new man and getting back out and being productive in his life and the things that he wanted to do with his life, you know, and the things how he wanted to aspire to change his life. And I'm grateful that he's going to be here tonight to share his story with us all. And we're looking forward to that. And before we begin, we want to give mad shout-outs and love to all the mothers and fathers who are out there, you know, who have lost their loved ones to gun violence or, you know, street violence. You know what I'm saying? Surely our condolences are with you. This is something that's continuously going on in our communities that we have to start to prevail over. And I believe with a little bit of knowledge and recultivation, re-education, these things are possible. And I'm sure everybody that rocks with me would agree, you know, because we were people, you know, who were behind the gun, and now here we are in front of the gun doing and making the changes that are necessary, not only for the impact of our lives, but the lives of our families and our community. And so, hey, you know, we are Shaheeds. We are witnesses to speak to the truth, that the truth can prevail. Alhamdulillah. So, Poppy, you with us, man?
Here. Can you hear me?
Okay. Yeah, I can hear you, bro. I can hear you, man. I can hear you. Alhamdulillah. I'm so, hey, listen, I called Poppy today and, you know, pulled him up, and he was like, man. It's like, yeah, I called him today. And but I had spoke with him a couple of times before about coming on the podcast. So right now we're going to let everybody just go ahead out. And before we go tonight, we're going to speak also about the review that Hassan and Krista have for us on the program that they had yesterday on the 14th in Richmond with the film festival that they had, and share some knowledge with us about that. Well, Poppy, go ahead and introduce yourself to the people and tell them about yourself and, you know, some of the, you know, share with us, man, a little bit about yourself and the things that you're doing at this present time in your life.
First and foremost, yeah, my name is Angel. He misspelled my last name as DeJesus. So that's just, but I appreciate the introduction, man. I really do. Second, man, where do I start? Blessed to be out here, man. You know, being behind bars for 27 years was not easy, you know, especially for me. You know, I'm Puerto Rican, you know, born and raised in New York City, Brooklyn.
Puerto Rico!
Yeah, and just the journey and the path that led me down to Virginia, you know, like most kids, you know, that we from the city, man, you know, we look for that opportunity, you know. Sometimes we find it, sometimes we don't. For me, you know, because it was just moving on from one hood to another hood, it became kind of like just an adventure, you know. But yeah, let me begin by saying, man, thank you, Malai, man, for allowing me to be on your podcast, and everyone else that's included with that. It was something that I did not expect. I know Malai asked me a long time ago, but as God know it, man, we all busy, man, out here. You know, I've been out here for 19 months now. I got pardoned by the governor last year, January 14th. Well, 13th, I got pardoned, and I was released on the 14th. So a lot of guys that know me, they know the story. But yeah, me and Malai, we met at Sussex too. But before then, you know, my journey started in New York City. You know, at the age of 14, I committed my first crime, and that led me in Spofford. Anyone that's from New York knows about Spofford. I was there for like 8 months, came home. I was put on probation for 5 years, but it just didn't stop me there. You know, I continued down that path, the streets. You know, I always say, man, you know, we look at the hood, we look at these communities, and to us, that's the norm. You know, that's the norm. Waking up every morning, coming outside, seeing drug addicts, seeing drug dealers, you know, that's part of our neighborhoods. That's just what molds us, you know.
Never met my dad, so I only had my mom's to count on. Strong woman, but she fell. She fell victim to drugs. And that's what kind of got me on the path, just saying, man, I don't really care. You know, I don't care. You know, anything, whatever. I was with whatever. Whatever was going down, I was with that.
And just
making my way to Virginia, I came down to Richmond with the wrong intentions. I came down here to sell heroin, and I was around these hoods out here, Mosby Court, Creighton Court, Fairfield. You know, we plagued them communities with heroin, you know. It was the norm. It was the norm. It was something that was going on there. Nobody looked at it as being wrong. People that did look at it like it was being wrong, you know, we really didn't care. That was the motto. The motto was, you know, let's get this money, and whoever gets in the way, you know, we just deal with them. And it's still going on. This is something that is not something that I'm saying that is not normal, because it's still going on. It's not normal to the people outside that don't see it. But you can't tell that to the kids out here, because they there. So they look at that as being normal, because nothing else is being introduced to them.
That's right.
So that's right. I say that to say, you know, I felt in 1995, I was actually arrested for capital murder. I had capital murder, I had robberies, I had malicious wounding. I don't think I have to go into what happened in my crime. It's in the archives, so anybody who want to see it, just look at my name, go to the archives, and you can read my story. But it was a drug deal going bad. Brought some drugs to a house. Somebody tried to take me out. I tried to defend myself. Somebody else died. I took full responsibility for my actions, which landed me in prison for life at the age of 17.
Wow.
Back, anybody that knows about the new law, I fell right there. I fell January in 1995 when the law was actually passed. So my crime happened on the 18th. The law was passed on the 1st. Not that I know anything about the law, because I'm not from Virginia, so it really didn't dawn on me what I had just did. You know, I looked at it like I'm defending myself. You know, somebody tried to take me out. You know, it's part of the normality where I'm at, doing what I was doing. I didn't see that as being, you know, something. I didn't even know somebody died, because it was a bullet that ricocheted and hit somebody else that I did not even know that was even there. So that's what made it even worse for me. It made it worse for me, because I did not intend to kill nobody. My intention is to bring the drugs and just sell them, get the money for them, and just leave, you know. But unfortunately, other people in that house had different intentions. So
yes, sir.
Everybody in my case was set free. Nobody did time but myself. You know, everybody came to court, testified against me. And
wow.
I stood on my ground, you know. I held my tongue, you know. I didn't say nothing, and it landed me a life sentence. The truth came out. It seemed like, for real, it just didn't matter. Not at that time, you know. So, yeah, I ended up with a life sentence. But before then, when they arrested me, in New York City. I had a violation for probation, so I ended up going to Rikers Island for 9 months in 1995 first. I was sentenced to a year and a half, to 4.5, so I ended up going downstate in New York, upstate. I ended up in Sing Sing, Comstock, and Caxsackie. In Caxsackie, one morning they woke me up and told me that I was being extradited to Virginia. So that was the end of New York and a new journey in Virginia. I was put on a plane. I was flew to Virginia. I went through the trial process and got convicted of first-degree murder and used of a firearm.
Wow.
All the other charges were dismissed. So that's where my journey began here in Virginia in 1997.
Yes,
that's when I started in receiving. They sent me to a receiving unit here. The thing about that was that New York, the agreement was for me to come to Virginia, go through the trial process, and right after that to be brought back to New York to finish my sentence.
Right,
so they violated that already. They violated that treaty. They basically just kept me because of the long sentence that they gave me. And New York never said nothing about that. I actually questioned it, but at that time, you know, it didn't matter. You know, a cell, going from one cell to another cell, you know, that was just the end of me, you know, as I seen it.
Right.
I was sent to Augusta. At Augusta, you know, when I first got there, seeing the camp, seeing how it was, open camp. Never seen nothing like that, because in New York, a maximum, you behind the walls. In Virginia,
yes,
you have these level threes and some of the level fours that actually you could see outside. So I thought they made a mistake. For me, you know, I got there. I wasn't with the bullshit there because I didn't know nobody, but I stood my ground, you know. Went to the law library, tried to fight my case and everything, but just it wasn't my thing. I didn't know nothing about the law. You know, I was 19.
Right.
So after that, it became a level three, so they moved everybody from Augusta to Sussex 2, and I ended up being at Sussex 2 for 16 years. And that's where I met Lai, brother from Jersey. And
hold your thoughts right there. Mother Queen, anything you'd like to say real quick and ask questions?
Good evening, Poppy. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Nobody, you know, it's crazy, Chrissy, because nobody calls me that out here. Like, the only ones that call me are the people that know me from prison. And I can tell you how I got that name, because nobody in New York calls me Poppy, only people in Virginia.
Okay. I was just about to say, when you came home, that's the first mm-hmm. thing that Katie and Nadia made sure that I got with you. They were like, please get with Poppy. And I was like, Poppy, okay, how am I going to find Poppy?
Exactly. Yeah, indeed. And it's funny because a guy from D.C. actually called me that in the basketball court, and it stuck with me because I'm Puerto Rican, so everybody was like, Poppy, pass the ball. And I was like, huh? And it stuck. Like, it literally just stuck with me from there on out.
Yeah.
And everywhere I went, I seen these DC guys, they calling me Poppy. And next thing you know, everybody's calling me Poppy. I'm like, oh, all right, be it, you know. If you knew what that meant, you know what I mean, you might not want to call me that anymore, but it's cool. So I changed. I actually changed the Poppy to Poppy, which is P-O-P-P-I-E. So I'm cool with that now, you know what I mean? But a lot of guys don't call me that out here. They call me either Angel or AJ from New York, you know? So, yeah, because that's what they used to call me back when I was growing up.
Well, with all due respect, I'm going to say AJ.
That's cool. Poppy, AJ, everybody knows me, you know what I mean? So, yeah. Well, how you been?
I'm good. You know, I was just sitting here jotting down some notes and just recidivism, you know, knowing that you went in at the tender age of 16, 17, and home now, you know, my question is, you know, what would you have told your younger self knowing all that you know now?
You know, the parole board asked me that same question.
Wow.
And knowing what I know now, you know, I don't think that 17-year-old kid would have listened, you know, because he was so far gone. He was gone. Like, literally, the streets had a control of me that I don't know if even God himself probably would have been like, yo, I can talk to this kid, you know, because I was far gone, man. You know, my mom's being on crack. Really took a toll on me, you know. I didn't have no love for nobody, man. I really didn't, you know. And I'm not that guy to tell you prison was the best thing for me, because prison is for nobody. That's a whole different animal. You know, I survived it just like a lot of brothers in there, but that's something that I don't wish on nobody, not even my worst enemy. Not even a dude that snitched on me. I wouldn't even care. I don't wish that upon nobody, man. Everybody's not built to do time. And that's not the way that I view it, you know what I mean? I feel like putting people behind bars have a different reason. It's not even about you paying a debt to society. It's not even about that. It has a way bigger meaning. And, you know, I talk about that a lot, but I don't think that, you know what I mean, I have enough time to express that in a way, but... Yeah, but so
no, I get it.
Back to that question. I don't think that, honestly, I don't know what can I say to that kid, you know, because seeing him now, you know, and seeing myself now, you know, I just can't. It's hard for me, you know. It's hard for me. I wish I had somebody there telling me something that could actually pull me out of that condition. And it wasn't. Nobody was there for me. Everybody that was around me, you know, the love that they had for me, it was a kind of love that was not conducive, but yet it was the kind of love that for me made sense at that time, you know.
Right. Brother Hassan, anything you wanna build? You wanna add?
Yeah, no doubt. Que pasa, papa? What's going on, man? Yeah,
doing all right, man. How you
doing? Yeah, bro. Listen, man. Look, I know that we come from, you know, unique experience of having been incarcerated, man. I did 23 and a half myself, and my experience was a little bit different from yours because I know you said you spent like 16 years at Sussex 1. And Sussex 2.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, yo, I did most of my time. I went to 10 different prisons, right?
Mm-hmm.
And everything from Wallace Ridge, Red Onion, Sussex 1, Lawrenceville, all the way down to level 1s, level 2s as well, right? And
mm-hmm.
I know that, you know, spending that time in there is a difficult thing. When we get out here, it's so many things that people take for granted when we're on the inside, right, that people out here, you know, people take for granted out there, out here in the world. When we're on the inside, we cherish, like, the smallest things, small things, right? What I want to know from you, man, yo, like, what's been the most rewarding thing for you since you've been out here, since you had an opportunity to be out here and breathe this, you know, air beyond the fences, man?
I think it's just, for me, just the maturity level, you know, and being able to see my moms, man, because that's one of the things that I ponder a lot in, you know what I mean? My mom, she held me down for the 27 years, even though she was going through the struggle and she was still using drugs and everything. She always made sure, man, that she stayed in contact with me, man. And just being able to, you know, see her, you know, now, to me, I don't care. I could be at my lowest point, but every time I talk to her, man, it just brightens up my day knowing that I'm out here and I could just take a flight or just drive all over New York and just be able to talk to her, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the most rewarding part of me coming home. And everything else, you know, I kind of like molded myself, you know. I wasn't the brightest guy in prison, man. I'm going to be honest here, you know. I took that mentality that I had in the streets, man, and I carry that with me in prison, you know, the survival skills, you know, the making money and everything. Anybody that knows me knows that was kind of like a huge part of why a lot of guys gravitated towards me, you know, survival of the fittest, man. You know, we all know about that. Segregation was a huge part of my incarceration, you know, whether I was up in New York, you know, and started off in Rikers Island going to segregation. It was the norm. Matter of fact, even in Spofford, Harlem Valley, a lot of guys from New York that know about Harlem Valley, I was there, you know, and I spent a lot of time in segregation. So I think solitude became my best friend in prison, you know. I hate to say it that way, but it was where I got to think, you know, about everything in life, which way my life was headed, which at that time had no really direction. And I always tell people, man, one of the, you know, in order for you to thrive in this world, in order for you to be successful, in order for you to even have knowledge yourself, you have to have somebody to help you with this. You don't learn these things by yourself. And for me, it became a lady, man, which is very dear to my heart. And this brother right here, man, he knows all about her, man. Her name is Ms. Rivers. She was a counselor at Sussex, too. She became like a second mother to me, man. She was the first person that actually truly cared. You know, even in my worst days, man, this woman showed compassion, you know. And that's something that I never experienced compassion, man, you know. So for her to show those traits to me, man, open up my eyes to a whole different lifestyle, a whole different way of thinking. And it didn't happen overnight, you know, but she made it possible for me to obtain the knowledge that I needed, you know, while I was behind bars, because she was like, don't think that because everybody gave up on you, you're supposed to give up on yourself. So she came at me in that direction. And at first I was like, I got a life sentence, man. I'm never going home. What are you talking about, you know? She's like, nah, don't think like that. As long as I'm here, there's always hope. And, you know, that stuck with me, man. So, you know, I ended up taking my GED. I took all the programs that they had there because of her. You know, she literally took me for one program. As soon as the program, I was done with that program, she turned around and put me in another program. And everybody that knows, if you have a life sentence in the state of Virginia, programs are obsolete. They don't want you to have these programs because they feel like you're correct. You know, give these programs to the guys that's going home. But in her mind was like, nah, don't worry about it. I'm your counselor, so I'm going to go ahead and sneak you in these programs if I have to, because I just want you to just pay attention to what they're saying. And I'm not saying you're going to end up living that way, but you at least be knowledgeable of all these things, man. You know what I mean? And they did help out. They helped out a lot for me, you know. I went from being, a guy that didn't really care to a dude that started showing compassion for others, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
That awareness actually molded me and got me to where I'm at today, to, you know, being out here in the world, you know, and showing compassion for everybody that's out here, man, you know, just being able to have those feelings, you know, not withdrawing them from no one, you know. I express them for the most part, you know, which that's needed, even when you're dealing with youth.
Yeah, I can definitely identify with a lot that you went through. Though I came in as an adult at 30 years of age, and I did visit. I was a resident at 14 different penitentiaries in the state of Virginia. And I was at actually Sussex 1 and Sussex 2, where I did meet Poppy and, you know what I'm saying, where I met Angel. And we, you know, we instantly clicked because we both from up top. I'm from Jersey, he's from New York. You know, I'm from Patterson. He's from, you know, Manhattan and the area and all of that. So
nah, I'm from,
we had
from
a lot
Brooklyn,
of,
from Brooklyn.
You're from Brooklyn, right. And we had a lot of comments. And, you know, it's crazy because when I got up there, first thing everybody was calling me was Jersey. And I was like, yo, nah. That ain't, you know what I'm saying? That ain't my name, bro. Jersey, you know, I'm from Jersey, but that ain't my name. Then they used to call me New Jeru. And I was like, no, that is not my name. My name is Palat or Minad, you know what I'm saying? But but it's like, you know, the thing that I really want to say, like, you know, going into the institution was a mercy for me. But, you know what I'm saying? And I can agree with Poppy. I wouldn't wish that on anyone. I'm grateful for the journey, but there was a great deal of jewels that I collected from the 14 different prisons that I went to. My first 8 years as Poppy, as Angel, I spent my first 8 years in segregation. You know what I'm saying? I spent a great deal of my time in segregation in the first 8 years of my incarceration. So, you know, and that was because coming to Virginia is a whole different machine. You know what I'm saying, as far as, you know, doing time behind the barbed wire city. You know, in the barbed wire city, was doing time is totally different in how it's, how the machine and the mechanism. Now, what I would like to know from you, Angel, is like, what jewels did you take from the many, many men that you were able to, you know, encounter, and how did that impact your change through the many, many, like you just spoke of Ms. Rivers, who's a wonderful woman. You know, can you share more with us of the jewels that you received from the people who helped cultivate you to who you are today?
You know, for the most part, man, it was the strength that guided me. You know, I always been the kind of person that I do a lot of observations, and I watch people's behaviors and all that. You know what I mean? I try my best to, look at everyone that I'm speaking to. I look at them in their eyes, you know. Those are the kind of things that, for me, help me identify with others and be able to express. I was able to express the person that I was to these guys, you know. For the most part, a lot of guys that gravitated towards me and I gravitated towards, we were all doing the same thing, you know. But these guys are so smart, man. Let me tell you, man, I left so many brothers behind bars right now, and the brothers that are home right now, you know, the Paul Taylors, you know, the Malai, man, you know, Catchmore, you know, Sincere. My homeboy, L.I., everybody that knows him, he just came home.
L.I.? Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's in Florida right now doing really good, man. He's doing really good, you know.
Wow.
So my homeboy, you know, Payne, you know, from New York, you know, he's in New York. He's doing good, too. So a lot of guys that I kind of like gravitated towards, you know, I don't know, for some apparent reason, we gravitated towards each other. You know, it's like once we seen each other, we knew we came off the same cloth. We was cut from the same cloth. So, you know, we were one army, you know, saying individuals, you know, we didn't need the crowd. We didn't need none of those things. And when we did, right. Start a building with each other, it made it even more like genuine, you know, like we had the same intentions. We came from the same environment. You know, not selling in prison is a big thing, man. So we live by that code, you know. And we always looked out for each other, man. Whatever prison these guys were in, they made sure to stay in contact. If anybody came from Sussex or anywhere, you know, Poppy, how he doing up there? So everybody always was checking up on each other. It became something of the norm. We became a family, and that's the reason why I'm alive, man. You know, he's still endeared in my heart, you know. Sincere, man, which is my roommate. You know, we lived together, you know what I'm saying? We came home the same exact day. He was parting
wow.
from the same prison. Like, me and
wow.
Sincere literally was working as cadres. We were in the gym. He literally, we were waiting till the last day. And early in the morning, they called us to take the COVID test. And Sincere, it was like, Sincere, the counselor came and was like, you got to come with me. He looked at me, and I looked at him. I was like, son, you just got your pardon, yo. And he came back, man, tears in his eyes, like, yo, they just pardoned me, yo. So, you know, I'm like, man, I told you, you know, he happy and all that. An hour later, they called me in the office and was like, you got pardoned. So he came home. He came home an hour right after me. His lawyer picked him up. Anthony Gomez came and picked me up. The crazy thing about this was that my home plan was in Philly with my brothers. Had a job waiting for me and everything. He was gonna go to Boston. That didn't happen. He ended up going to Boston, but they did some wild stuff to him up there. You know what I mean? They put a monitor on his leg and was like, you can't talk to the felons and all that. So he was like, man, I'm going back to VA. So he called his probation officer, his parole officer, and they made sure that they got him back. For me,
okay.
It was the people here. The people here in Virginia was like, man, stay. We need you out here. You know, and I understand. And some of my family was like, they can't understand the reason why that I stay in Virginia. I don't have no family out here. I don't have nobody out here in VA. And I told myself, you know, man, you know, these are the guys that, to me, you know what I mean, I need to help out. You know, I need to be that personnel too, man, you know what I mean, helping these guys come home. And I'm doing everything that I can, you know, I'm showing up. I'm not talking about it. I'm showing up. Everywhere, you know, out here in Richmond, I'm showing up. But the way I'm doing it, man, it's different. It's different. It's not like everybody else, man. We all
That's
have
right.
a way of showing up. The way I do it, man, I'm in their face, man. I'm in the governor's face. I'm in the lieutenant governor's face. You know, I have a lot of people in those areas now. You know, I made a lot of good contacts. And yeah, man, that's the way that I'm doing it, man. And helping these guys
well,
out, you know.
I'm proud of you. I'm ultra proud of you. You know, you are that. You are my familiar. You my family. You always been since the day I met you. You know, and it's crazy when you mentioned L.I. and Payne. Like I remember them too, especially Payne. Payne,
mm-hmm.
you know, me and Payne go way back. You know, Payne was a young dude too when he came in, and man, it's like yo. Hey man, I'm really grateful for everything that you contributed to a lot of the change that's going on around us right now. And
mm-hmm.
at this point, let's see if we have any callers. Jay Sean, do we have any callers? Anybody calling in?
1 second.
Jay Sean. Okay.
Yeah.
And to all the listeners, if you'd like to call in, please dial 1, and we will allow you to come on in and give a positive comment or feedback. Thank you.
1298, you live.
Hello,
Brother
Sister Latoya. How you doing,
you?
Sis?
Oh, I
okay,
think
okay.
I think our Sister Crystal, Brother Hassan. Hope all is
yes.
well.
Peace and blessings, sis.
Peace and blessings to you as well. Sister Crystal, it's always great to hear your voice.
Oh.
Yes. Thank you. Oh, thank you. Angel. I tell
yes.
you, God put you in people's path for a reason.
you know, God always sees the best in us when other people always see the worst. So it's a reason why he put you back out here for a reason, and he put you on all those wonderful people's paths. Continue doing what you're doing because it's working out for your good and God's glory. What I will continue telling you to ask, tell him and lead, and you will continue following him.
Thank you.
Thank you. She be making me want to cry all the time. Hey, sister, I'll tell you, I'm gonna start carrying me a box of tissue every time you come on the show. She just be hitting the brother, man. Hey, but yeah, and Sister Latoya is one of the family members of Point of Impact, and so you know, Angel, why don't you share with everybody, like, what are some of the things that you initially are doing right now in the projects that you're working on? Most importantly, can you share more with them about how you know, your youth program where you're going into the schools?
So when I first came home, because I was released the following day, it was hard for me to find a job. I didn't have a Social Security card, you know, because of the new administration coming in on the 15th, they were like, you know, we got to get you home, we got to get you out. So those are the things that I had a little bit of time obtaining. So it took me about 4 months to get a job. I didn't have the resources. Nevertheless, you know, my family carried me through. A few churches out here helped me and Sincere out, you know. So I made it through that process. Then I got me a job doing the solar panels. I got me a little degree with that. I did that for like 5 months, but I always knew that wasn't my calling. It was just something to pay the bills at that time.
I never
been the kind of guy to ask nobody for anything. I feel like God gave me two hands, two legs, you know, two eyes. I could see, I could verbalize myself very well, you know. So therefore, you know, I just continue to work. Anything that was available at the moment, I was, you know, doing it. Right after that, I put in an application with a brother that inquired me to go ahead and do it because he was working by himself. And this job pertaining to driving trucks was something that I wanted to do. So I got me a job working for Michelin. I did that for 10 months. And in the course of doing that, a friend of mine introduced me to this guy named Steve. And he has a program here in Richmond. It's called Boys to Men. And he's in the schools. They go into the schools. So he asked me to come to one of his schools in Chesterfield and talk to the youth in the circles that they have. So I went to two of the, I took off from work early and I went to two of these circles. And the principal there was like, man, I got to bring Angie back. So at that time, Steve sat down with me and his staff and they offered me a part-time job. And I was like, well, I can't do the part-time job because, I'm working a full-time right now. I just can't do that now. If y'all hire me full-time, then it's a different story. Then I'll be able to be part of Boyz II Men. So it took about 6 months. But they finally got it done. The thing was that with, you know, some nonprofit organizations, they don't have benefits, they don't have, you know, health insurance and all these things. So I had to think hard about that, man. 401k, those are the things that we you know, we got to look at, especially being out here on your own. So I took that, man. I stepped back, man. You know, I prayed on it, and I said, you know what, but this is where I want to be. I need to do this, you know. I need to go into these schools because nobody's actually doing that. So I finally said yes, man, and they hired me. I've been with them for 2-3 months now. And I go to literally 39 different schools right now. And wow. I go to Richmond. I go to schools in Richmond, Henrico, Chesterfield, Petersburg, Hopewell, Colonial Heights. Yeah, and I go into some of them are alternative schools, middle schools, and high schools. And wow. we have an hour in each school. We have a circle between 10 to 15 kids at a time. And, yeah, we there, man. We help out these kids. And we don't judge. That's one of the things, Boyz II Men. It's hard to understand how they actually came up with this concept, but I love it, man. I mean, you know, in these circles, dealing with the youth, the circle's for them. It's no judgment. So whatever they're going through, we throw it inside of the circle, man, and that's where it stays. And that's what I've been doing for the last 3 months. And it's amazing, man. It's amazing because I would have never found my, I would have never thought of doing something like that. In my mind, I visualized it, but I would have never thought that somebody would have gave me that opportunity. And that opportunity was made for me, you know. And yes, I'm actually doing that, man.
Wow, that's wonderful, bro. I'm real proud of you, bro. And I just pray that Allah continue to increase you in the things that you're doing. Jay Sean, do we have any other callers? Do we have another caller?
Not at this time.
Okay. Okay, Mother Queen, is there a question that you'd like to ask?
Well, yeah. My question is mostly because Hassan and I too have an after school program that we do out in Gilpin Court. And when I tell you, the kids are so brilliantly manipulative at times because they have to be, or they have to learn how to maneuver, like you said, in their environment. And they know how to survive, you know, it's like you said, survival of the fittest. So a lot of times, you know, they play good cop, bad cop between the two of us, and then, you know, they really gravitate towards Hassan when Hassan is sharing his experience, and they gravitate towards me as a nurturer.
Right.
So being able to provide the right type of balance for individuals where a lot of times I have not gone through a lot of things that these young men have gone through. It is, so I have to pass the ball to Hassan because he can probably relate, be more relatable. But my question to you is when you get to a child or a that is, you just can't get to them, the core of what their issue is, how do you try to, you know, become more transparent or deal with them and really get them to open up to you?
You talking about, you speaking to me?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. So, yeah, I thought you were talking to Hassan. So one of the things that Boys the Man actually do in this circle, when we first come into the circle, we check in with a feeling. First you say your name, a feeling, and let's say what you did last weekend. We always ask them to say something that either they did or they thinking, you know, just to basically open up a conversation.
Right.
Feelings are very important because feelings come from emotions. So we have five different feelings: happy, sad, angry, you know, and the last feeling is shame. So if one of them say, well, today, you know, I'm angry, we'll come back to them. And we'll either ask the question, why are you so angry? Why are you feeling angry? No judgment. And if he opens up, it's cool. If he don't, then that's cool too. Because at the end of the day, we're not there to judge. We're not there to actually, like question what's going on with you or none of those things. That's not what we do with Boys to Men. We are there just to learn and to more or less like share our experiences and maybe have them share theirs because they do. They open up. I mean, had so many kids start crying, you know, sharing their stories of what they're going through. And to me, you know, while we hearing these stories from these young kids, it's you have to be mindful that they are kids. So you don't want to, okay, well, look, I see you crying, what's going on, and try to help him out with what's going on. You just want him to understand what he just finished saying. So while he's speaking, you might want to repeat exactly. So let me hear you. This is what you said, right? I want to make sure that I got exactly what you were saying. And repeat everything he said, you know, and ask him after that, like, okay, so what do you feel about this, you know, or what do you feel about that you said, you know, and let them continue to talk. That's how you connect with the youth, you know. You don't try to instill anything of you into them because that's going to kind of fail, honestly. You know, you're only there for 1 hour with them, so you want them to be able to come back and actually be able to relate even more. So it's different. I mean, I would have thought that I'd go in there and encourage these kids to do different. No, that's not my position. So I'm learning mm-hmm. what Boyz II Men really do. And like I said, we got over 500 kids right now that we actually mentoring. And we also have a thing that's called the rite of passage. So after, let's say, like the first 6 months, we take a group of 15 or 20 kids, and we take them through what is called a rite of passage. So we might pick two kids out of each circle, and if we decide that they are ready to go through the rite of passage, we take them through that. And then they become journeymen. It's a lot to Boyz II Men, man. I really enjoy it, man. And I'm going to encourage everybody to go up on the website, you know, and look it up and see the kind of work that we do, because it's important, man. And I would have never thought that you would have had these type of organizations doing this kind of work, you know. But now that I'm part of it, man, it's to me, you know, it's something that is needed. And we're trying to incorporate other things with the guys that's coming home from prison to actually take the Boyz II Men training so that they could get certified learning how to do this kind of work. So we're working on that too. And we actually trying to take that. Yeah, we're trying to take that to, and that's part of what I'm bringing to the table, you know. So that's on the make. That's kind of like in the making right now. Like I said, I have spoken with a few different Congress people, congressmen, women. I'm also in contact with the Attorney General, Mayares, and his staffing. So we just trying to get things done differently, you know, and see if it can help out the way we're doing it too. You know, everybody brings something different to the table, so that's the way that we're doing it.
That sounds very, you know, that I like that. It sounds very promising, actually. And it's very, it shines a great deal of hope. Brother Hassan, anything you want to say?
Yeah, no question, man, because I admire that. I've heard of Boyz II Men, right? And even had an opportunity to speak with them at one of the functions out in Churchill one time. And at that time, I was working in a transition home for Help Me Help You, helping men make a transition back into society. And that's been very rewarding. Over the past year. But what I felt like what I needed to do was make a transition from that into helping the children, being out there in Gilpin Court has been great, right? And Jackson Ward has been really rewarding, just seeing how the children respond to us and how they really come back to participate. They don't, you know, come because somebody's making them. They come because they want to come, right? And I think that it's so admirable for the work that you're doing right now, Angel, man. And the praises need to be sung for more individuals that are participating in that type of work, because, in essence, that is the only way that we're going to curb this influence toward that prison, that school-to-prison pipeline that we have to break. And I think that the children are the key to that. And so creating that space right there is a wonderful, wonderful thing. And it sounds like y'all even have somewhat of a healing circle, using the healing circle method in order to bring about change in those youngins, man. And so I just want to know, man, because I know how it make me feel when the children come up to me. And you know, they see us every day. So now there's a camaraderie, there's a love that's being, you know, developed. And when they come up and they hug me, man, and they jump into my arms and they say, Hassan, we so happy that you're here. It's like one of the most rewarding things that I've ever, you know, felt in my life. You know, like when you're with the children, man, how does it make you feel when they start to open up to you? Like, because I know how it makes me feel, but just tell the people how rewarding that is, man.
I mean, I think there's no reward, man, for this kind of work, man. I think the reward is them. It's seeing their faces, the expression, the hurt, the pain, all these things that they're going through at such a young age. That, to me, I wouldn't trade it for the world, man, because I felt that pain. I was that child that was hurt like that, you know, and I didn't need nobody to fix me. That's the thing. We're not there to fix anyone. I needed somebody to love me. I needed somebody to care for me. I needed somebody to say that I was someone, you know, that they seen me. You know, I see you, man. You know, a lot of these kids are traveling through this planet, this world, man, and these things are not being said to them, you know. They just being taken care of, you know, like anything else. You know, get home, yeah, take a bath, here's the food, wake up tomorrow morning, do the same thing again. Because of that environment, you know, that environment is common. It's common in these neighborhoods, man, you know, especially these low-income communities, man, something that's being, it's been there. Not much is being done. And I mean, for me to come in to these schools and be able to actually listen, because that's one of the things that we do, we listen. And they appreciate that, you know, they truly do, man. You know, just the other day, man, I went to Pittman in Petersburg, and let me tell you, man, we had a conversation there, man, with these kids, man, and you know, they in the streets, but the two that I thought were not gonna actually, you know, even speak, those were the ones that actually just turned it around, man. And I mean, they just expressed themselves in a way that it really touched. It touched me so much that I started crying. I was like, and it was like, why are you crying? I was like, man, because y'all just don't understand, man. You know, you know, you shouldn't be going through this. Not at your age. You should not be going through this. There's no way, man. Why? You know, I thought that when I got incarcerated, honestly, at the age of 17, you know, I was made to believe that I was an animal, that you know, I was incorrigible, you know, that no one can fix me, that I was a problem. So they removed me from the world, from society, because I was being a monster, you know. And that was not true. That wasn't facts. That was all a lie, you know. That was all a lie, man. And to actually still see the same things going on 27 years later, who's to blame in this? Or is this just something that it was meant for it to be this way?
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
I mean, because nothing has actually changed. Everything's still the same, you know? And that's the sad part about it, man. People talk about this, people talk about that, but things have not changed. If anything, you know, everything evolves, you know what I mean? So with the drugs, it evolved. You know, with the phones, it evolved.
That's right. Yeah, everything. Yeah, there is a process to life, and I'm, you know, that's wonderful, because there's as we call it, the pre-decree of Allah's will in your life, be it good or bad, and there's a design. I believe there's a design towards everyone's progress, and I believe that's a process, and it's not always a process that is clean and pretty and beautiful. Some, you know, it's greatly struggle, it's greatly resilience and strength that is imposed in an individual, that they have to step up in their lives in order to change their lives. Change only come about through change. So this is, you know, this is very important. We got a caller. Jay Sean, do we have a caller, you said? Yeah, it's going to be our last caller for the night.
Yeah, assalamu alaikum, rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. This is Shadi.
Wa alaikum assalam. Shadi,
assalamu alaikum. Yes, alhamdulillah. Good. Yeah, I was just listening, you know, to you, and I'm proud of you and your team, Malai, you know, for the work that y'all doing. And I just listening to Angel, you know, saying that, you know, he's been gone for 27 years and, you know, not much changed. And, you know, and we've been fighting. We've been fighting the battle. There's we got years of fighting this battle. We know that there's a decree, but, you know, the decree is, you know, what is it? What can we do, basically, that is in our control? Because we've seen, I mean, And I heard him say he's in touch with the you know, the governor, you know, and I've been a part of that for years. I what he's talking about, Boys to Men, I was putting one of those together myself. And the circle that he's talking about, that I used to work at a facility, and it was called group therapy. And what you were doing was positive reinforcement. I just wanted to ask him, what is the age bracket of the young men that come in, and are they being reprimanded there, or are they volunteers, Angel?
Good question.
So most of these kids that come into the circle are from the parents. The parents are asking the schools to put them in this program. And they actually calling, they scheduling meetings with Boys to Men, you know, and we get emails every day from different schools and their parents, because they got to go through, the parent has to actually sign waivers and everything to allow us to be able to talk to these kids. And some of them are coming from the principal, you know, that they feel that they need some guidance right now. They just need Boys to Men. They need to kind of like tone down the emotions that they're going through, that they're feeling and everything, you know. And that's just me putting it in lame terms, you know what I'm saying, and kind of like, right. You know, it's more to that. It's a lot. It's a process that has to take place in order for them to come to the circles.
Right.
Because it's also law enforcement there, you know, that come in and sit down in the circle.
Right.
So
right.
the age bracket is 13 through 17, you know. For me, they allow me to talk to the football teams too. Like I'll go in like at 4:30 while they actually, you know, going through their training, and I'll just come down and talk to all of them at one time, you know. So it's a lot of things right now that I myself is incorporating with Boys to Men. As far as like when I do get the chances to talk to, you know, anyone of authority, you know, then I could recommend them to come to the program. I try to get them to get there, and I had succeeded in that. It's a lot of people right now that are putting in the time and asking for a schedule, you know, so they come in and sit down in a circle so they can see what it's about, you know. So I feel like, you know, that's somewhat needed, you know, to open up a more of a dialogue with the administration and everyone that feels like these communities can never thrive or they're supposed to be helping us and they really not, you know. All these things need to be looked at, and I feel like that's a way of doing it, you know. That's me playing my part in this big world, you know what I mean? But it's a lot that's taking place right now as we speak, you know. So stay tuned, because I'm that kind of person, man, that I love to invite. I love to bring people together, you know. So I'm definitely looking for the options too, you know. I already incorporated Catchmore in them for me to come down there and see how they run in their programs, and for them to come to where I'm at and come into the circles and volunteer to come in and do a little bit of that work, you know, so I can get ahead and mix it together. Most likely, Malai's going to come to the programs, because I have a group of guys, man, that I'm still in contact with that I'm going to incorporate to come in and share their stories and hopefully could take this back into their communities too, you know?
Alhamdulillah. Yeah, alhamdulillah. And that was Shadi. Shadi is my brother and family. Mm-hmm. You know, we grew up together. You know what I'm saying? And Shadi has a wonderful program. He's getting ready to produce. It's called Peep the Game. And that's going to be a really, really igniting show, and I'm looking forward to it. Shadi's really working hard, and I really want to give you juice, brother. You know, you're doing your thing, man. And listen, we got to get ready to get out of here. So you got, like, give me 2 minutes, Angel, you know, Papi, and let the people know, you know, what you're going to leave them with, man. You got 2 minutes, man.
Man, first and foremost, man, Malai, man, thank you for having me as a guest speaker for you, man, for real, man. Anytime you call me, you know I'm there.
Yes, sir.
For the most part, man, for me, man, it's just been a journey, man, like no other, man. And I wouldn't change it for the world, man. If they gave me an opportunity to come home and do this kind of work, man, there's a lot of guys in there that deserve the same right. You know, they have earned it. You know, and to me, that's very important. The kind of work that we're doing out here individually is something that everyone should pay attention to, because there's a lot of things that are being translated in a negative way, but they never speak about the kind of good things that we out here doing. And
right,
we have to shine a light on all these things, you know, and not just, you know, the rallies and everything. They're beautiful. They're beautiful, but we have to get out and vote. You have to stand in these people's faces, because they're the ones who get to change policy. They need to see us. They need to see that we are human beings, no matter what. You know, no matter what, if they be like, well, okay, if they change their mind about one of us or whatnot, as long as we stay in their faces, you know, that's when change comes about. But the work is being done. The work is being done through the poor sellers, to the Sheba Williams, one of them. You know, I admire that woman, man.
Sir.
She's doing such a great work out here, man, helping the community out. Sincere, Allah, man. He's out here, man, grinding every day, man. I live with this guy, man. I see him. He stayed traveling. I know he done put about 5,000 miles on his car in just 1 week from traveling, man.
Yeah.
You know? So, you know, I'm playing my part, man, in the school system, man. I feel like that's needed. That's another branch that we need, that we have not touched, because they don't allow us to go into these schools. So I got the opportunity to do that, man, and trust and believe that I'm not going to leave nobody behind. I want everybody to come in these schools because it's needed. My message is just as well as the next person's message, you know, and I live with these guys. I know their potential. As far as for me, man, I'm blessed, man, to say the least, man. I'm blessed to be out here in this world that I never thought that I was going to be able to come home to. I already had made my bed in prison, man. I told myself if I was going to die in prison, man, that I was going to become a better version of myself, you know. I did that. I accomplished that,
right.
Man. I accomplished that, man. And just being out here and seeing what's going on, man, I just, you know, it's amazing, but at the same time, it hurts. It hurts.
Yeah.
Even when I get up every morning, man, to do the work, man, because it's no longer about me. I don't consider it being about me, man. Trust and believe, man. I could have been long gone, man. I got land in Puerto Rico, man. Right now, I could just wait, man, finish this new 13 months and go and move to Puerto Rico and live my life, you know. But that's not what I want to do, man. I really want to be out here in these streets that at one time, man, I literally terrorized, you know. So for me, it's something that is genuine, and I want to change it for the world, man. And I'm thankful. So with that, I leave all of y'all, you know.
Wow. Yo, this right here, this is going to be, we got to get ready to close. This is emotional for me. It's my family, seeing him, you know. I'm proud of you. I'm just really, like, my I've been flowing with tears out of my eyes, man, for the past, like, 3 minutes, man. Just absorbing, you know, just the quality of people that are in my life today. You know, and a lot of them, you know, are people who've been in my life for a number of years, but, you know, just to see what we all are and the quality people that we have become, you know, is so impressive to me. It's amazing. And I'm grateful, and I give praise to Allah. I'm going to have to close. I want to, in behalf of my team, you know, Point of Impact, family, you know, Community United Focus, Freedom Over Everything, you know, we really are doing some good work, and I just pray that, you know, we are significant in our lives and in the lives of the people that are nearest to us, and that we continue to do this work, keeping Allah first. And I thank everyone who's been on our show. Remember, December the 15th, everyone, please strive to get out here. Night of Recognition, Point of Impact, Night of Recognition, fundraising event. You'll be able to meet these wonderful people like Poppy and Shadi and, you know, Miss Mother Queen Krista, Hassan, Shabazz, and many guests that we've had on this show. please, and the many more we still have yet to come. So December the 15th, man, put that on your calendar. Get out here to Norfolk, Virginia, you know, Friday night, and let's all, you know, spend a night of recognition together and imploring one another with strength and the energy to continue doing the work that we're doing and impacting the lives that we are impacting, but most importantly, our own lives. With that, we're going to close, y'all. We're going to get out of here. Brother Shadi, you wanted to say something real quick?
Yeah, I just wanted to say with my site, and if anyone get a chance, you get a chance. It's called Peep Game TV on YouTube. That's pretty much it, you know, and I appreciate you for having me on. And Angel was a wonderful guest, and the three of you, your team, you know, you guys are superb.
Thank you, beloved. You know, that means a lot to me.
Yeah.
You know, I think, you know, when I look around me, man, listen, ain't nothing but pearls, you know, pearls, man, and jewels, man, and it's just wonderful, man. This experience, and this is why Point of Impact is the way it is. We're an underground podcast. We're not here for fame. We're not here for fortune. We're here for the benefit of significance and being significant in each other's lives. And that's what it's about. That's the greatest success for me. Jay Sean, anything you want to say so we can close?
Oh, man, just a really good show, man. And keep doing what you're doing, everybody. And peace to my man, Pavi.
Yeah, peace, man. Y'all be safe.
Poppy, man, I love you. Brother, listen. Puerto Rico. Hey, listen.
I used to hear that every day, man.
You know, Paul Rude is in the house. Paul Rude is in the house, baby. Hey, listen, man, I love you. I love you, brother. And I'm so, I literally was sitting here just in that overly emotional, just grateful, like nothing but joy, man, hearing you. Brother, you are magnificent, man, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the story. You know, I'm looking forward to the rest of the story.
Yeah, what you're doing, man. You know, I mean, we don't do this, like you said, we don't do this for the accolades, man. We do this because that's what our hearts tell us to do, you know. We always been humanized, you know. We always been, well, I'm going to say, in our part, you know what I mean, we were dehumanized, but now we humanized, and we're humanizing everybody else around us, you know what I mean? So, you know, Paul said one thing that always sticks with a lot of us, man. We relevant, man. We relevant, you know what I mean? And I appreciate that, brother, for the work that he does. He's been doing it. He's kind of like one of my mentors, you know. He encourages me, you know what I mean? And when it's times where I'm feeling down, man, he'll even come through and talk to me, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. So, I mean, that's the kind of work that we do, man. We uplift each other up, man, you know, because we know what it takes. We know what it takes because we've been through it. So that's important. I think that's the message I think that everybody needs to understand, that, you know, we might not have the degrees and none of that, but we have that life experience. And you can't speak about someone that has been incarcerated for 20 plus years. You know, 20 plus years behind in a cell.
That's right.
A lot of people look at that and like, man, you know, it happened to him. You know, I'm not going to go through that. But in a blink of an eye, man, anybody can go through
anybody,
that process. We were fortunate to come out of that.
Bobby, with that, we're going to end on that note.
Uh-huh.
Because we gotta close. That's right. In the blink of an eye, it could be you. It could be you. In the blink of an eye. So listen, man. Everybody, man, stop what you're doing, man. Take this time right now to stop what you're doing, man. And just do something, man, that'll benefit you in this life and in the hereafter. That will benefit your family and that will benefit your community, your locality. Listen, man, we love you. Wonderful show, y'all. Please, man, get with us. December the 15th. Poppy, we love you, bro. I'm going to get back
love
at
you.
You
more, man.
We got to close the show. Tell Sid, man, he needs to be available. stop playing before I go knock on the door. And we're going to get out of here, man. Hey, listen, I love y'all, man. Everybody be safe. Thank you all for joining us again. See you next weekend, Sunday, 7 p.m. Night. Point of Impact. Y'all enjoy it. All right? Assalamu alaikum. Everybody be safe.
Shout out, Young Swiss.
Official. I'm down on one knee, I hope you need a tissue. Do you take me for eternity? And make a pinky promise that you never leave. Even when you're mad at me, just don't up and leave. The future is scary, I don't wanna see. My life without you will be a tragedy. When I wake up in the mornings, you won't wanna see. I'm sorry, babe, there's so much that I wanna say. First, let me ask you, will you marry me?
Oh my God, I'm seriously about to cry right now. Are you serious?
Baby, you know that I love you. I want you to know that I love you.
I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I do. I love you, I love you, I love you, I do.